arrow down that down arrow.
That's
and if
how
you get lost,
change.
Yeah, down arrow and up arrow if you get lost.
Down arrow. Can I have somebody, the man in the red jacket, would you turn off the lights, please? Welcome, everyone. We're going to start right in. Would you mind turning off the light in the closet? We're delighted to welcome back John Horrigan. I think you'll thoroughly enjoy his presentation. Let's give him just a little round of applause.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here tonight, and this joint is jumping. Thank you very much. I had given this lecture originally on April 21st, 2007, almost to the very moment that the fire started. Some time ago in 1941, but I always wanted to do it for the summer people because I'm an old colonial boy from Green Harbor, a summer person in God Bless Marshfield. Okay, Chris. I'm going to be driving the narrative off the screen, the text, Lazy Man's Lecture, so everybody can see. If you can't read the text, don't worry. They'll be able to hear me in Duxbury, I assure you.
Ooh.
The Great Ocean Gulf Fire, the Great Brent Rock Fire, we're going to discuss that in just a moment. I'm a historical fire researcher, expertise in 17th to 19th century fires. I'm a historical astronomy researcher, historical weather researcher. My specialties are the hurricane of 1938, the great record of the St. John.
We'll probably be doing that one again, the hurricane of 38 here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The New England lighthouse storm. And in fact, Chris and I are talking about me doing the year without a summer, which I think is so appropriate.
That's to do with sunspots.
Right, it's about the year 18 and 16, where it snowed in Boston on June 7th, and there was frost in Marshfield in July. And it was caused by three factors, and I'll just end with this: sunspots, volcanic activity, and the movement of the sun within our solar system. But we're talking about that, so I'd love to have you come back at that point. I'm called a New England folklorist, and what that means is I don't have any prefix before my name, I don't have any suffix after my name, and I don't have any mortgage-sized student loan nipping at my heels. And I've been called many things: a rogue nostalgian, a non-academic storyteller, and other things that can't be an infotainer born from Google Books and PowerPoint. One guy said I was a cross between Indiana Jones and Fox Mulder without all the drama or the talent. I'm an expert on meteorological anomalies in America from Columbus up and through about 1938. I love aviation, legends. I belong to a number of historical societies. And I must tell you right away, I'm a professional sports announcer with the Boston Bruins alumni and the New England Patriots alumni club. I'm the Patriots basketball announcer. So if I break out into my hockey voice, I apologize in advance, but I've been doing it for a long time. Lastly, and I just want to go back, Chris, and the other one. Just test if Chris has it down. The New England History Festival. Unfortunately, it's the November 14th and not the 15th, but this is my third annual. I call it Historapalooza, or Farm Aid for Reenactors. The past is a blast. November 14th in Watertown, New England History Festival. My website is ushistory.me, M-E. Just some this, that, and the other thing. Cell phones, off please, and usually when I say that, mine rings. I do not blog, nor do I read blogs, but I might one day. Questions at the end of the lecture, but we can work them in. And my old axiom is there's always someone in attendance who thinks that they know more about the subject than I do, and of course, someone who actually knows more about the subject than I do. And I'm sure that applies to some of you folks here tonight. And again, seriously, fire exits right here, get outside, right through there to the left, get outside, move away from the building. Some great fires in New England, and I apologize if I stand in your way, I'll move around and annoy everybody here tonight. But some great fires in New England, 1623 Plymouth. That's the fire where basically smoking was banned outdoors. If you wanted to smoke, you had to smoke indoors because the embers would go into thatched roofs. So we come full circle. 1676, the great fire took Paul Revere's family home. 1711, 1760, burned Faneuil Hall. 1775, the shelling of Falmouth, Maine. Portland, Maine by Moat. 1866, July 4th, the city burned down. And then 1872, known as Damrell's Fire, the greatest fire in Boston history. 1894 in Roxbury, which burned down the old South End grounds. In fact, I just returned from the Baseball Hall of Fame where I did a lot of research on said fire, and that's going to be in my upcoming book, if I ever can fool a publisher into publishing it. 1926, Nantasket. 1942, the Coconut Grove. 73, Chelsea, and of course, the Station Club. Just some of the pricey fires throughout history. You can see Haverhill, 1822, Boston, 1899, and those are the dollars in, according to the years. The reason why I want to mention Great Portsmouth Fire is because it brings a character to Marshfield. On December 26, 1802, at 4 a.m., 132 buildings were lost in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. It started on the side of the banking block in what is today Market Square and obliterated the city along Daniel Street. In the central parade, only the North Church and the Old State House were left standing. On Wednesday morning, December 24, 1806, the second great downtown fire moved in from Bow Street area up Market Street and back towards the barely recovered square. St. John's Church and 13 buildings were absorbed by the fire. And that's because this guy, on Wednesday, December 22, 1813, the largest great fire in Portsmouth, New Hampshire history happened when a terrible fire burned nearly the entire central business district, 300 buildings, and it stopped only when it reached the Piscataqua River. A promising young New Hampshire attorney named Daniel Webster lost his Portsmouth house to the fire of 1813, and he relocated to nearby Massachusetts, which is right here in Marshfield. And then again in 1845, another fire occurred. Webster is attributed to saying, Marshfield is half marsh and half heaven. Just some other fires, I won't bore you with this. The Great Nantucket Fire that I've researched, this is where whale oil went up in flames. This is where they used to take, and this would make Chief Robinson's hair curl. They used to take the hot ashes, put them into a wooden box, and you take that wooden box out to another wooden box that was towed by a man, and he stored it in a wooden building. Well, at least the fires. And they do it near the whale oil barrels. Not that that would catch up. But the whole island of Nantucket went up in July 13, 1846. And what was unique about this is there were fist fights between the fire departments to see who had the right to put it up as the island burned out. Another one on Martha's Vineyard on August 11, 1883. And then this is the Great Roxbury Fire, and I don't want to bore you with this, but the South End Grounds, it was the home of the Boston Bean Eaters, who eventually became the Boston Braves. And three structures stood there, South End Grounds 1, 2, and 3, from 1871 until 1914. And after this fire, the Bean Eaters played in three ballparks that year, South End Grounds 2, South End Grounds 3, and the Congress Street Grounds. And basically, 177 buildings went up, underinsured, and the Braves moved out of those grounds, etc., and they came to the stretch drive of the 1914 pennant race. I think the Congress grounds was like 250 feet to right. I could put a wiffle ball up there. So, is it the Great Ocean Bluff Fire, the Great Shore Fire, the Great Brent Rock Fire? The answer is yes. It's been called all three fires by major newspapers. And this is the fun part. I always pick up a new hamlet. But in 1640, Marshfield, founded by Edward Winslow, voted to incorporate townships. The village's district's names were, and I'm going to put in some names that I've heard, and I'd love to hear you chime out if I forget any. Brant Rock, Center Marshfield, Ferry Hill, Fairbanks Park, Hewitt's Point, Green Harbor, Duxbury Beach, Fieldston, Everson's Island, Major's Island, Marshfield Hills, East Marshfield, North Marshfield, Humrock, Ocean Bluff, Ocean's Bluff, Wrexham Terrace, Wrexham, Holly Hill, Seaview, my favorite, Marsh Vegas, Standish, which is in the Route 139 area, Holy City, which was a name given to the cluster of tiny cottages around St. Anne's by the Sea, served in the late 1910s and early 1920s. This factors prominently in our story tonight. Sunrise Beach, the name given to the beach area in Ocean Bluff. Abington Village, an area in Fieldston adjacent to Sunrise Beach. Greenbush, the name given in the late 19th century to the area west of Brant Rock on the opposite side of the river. Bluefish Bay, Blackman's Point, tacked in the middle of the 19th century. Careswell was the name given to the area near Flaherty's Pond, that's where I grew up, and the New Assumption Church. Duxfield, name given to houses on the Duxbury Marshfield line on the way to Duxbury Beach. Green Harbor Village, Cedar Crest, which was a campground off of Careswell Street. Burke's Beach, Black Mount, Fieldston Lodge, Everson Village District. Anybody have another one? I'd love to hear it. Marshfield Acres.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful.
Where is
that?
Where was that? Behind Burn
Where the Tower Avenue Playground is.
At the Tower Avenue Playground.
Yes, that's that whole section. There's once a pond.
Oh,
wonderful.
Yeah.
After World War II, all the lots of land were sold to the returning veterans for a very minimal price.
Oh, I forgot to add Rite Aid Village, Walgreens Village, and CVS Village. I'm sorry. So that's Ocean Bluff. It's not Brant Rock, folks. It's Ocean Bluff and Fieldston that went up on April 21st, 1941. I'll read the stone. Brant Rock is a village named for Brant, Geese, two islands early called Governor's Island, later Hewitt's Island and Branches Island, together known as Spectacle Islands. The early landowners were John Bradford, Christopher Winter, John Hewitt, and John Branch. It was the site of resort hotels, Pioneer Cottage of 1861, the Churchill of 1866, the Brant Rock House of 1874, the Ocean House of 1875, the Fairview of 1877, and the Peace Haven. And obviously when this was made, the Peace Haven was still standing. Is Derek Gunn here, Derek? Okay, Derek's an expert on Fessenden. You know about this, right? The first radio broadcast was conducted by Canadian Reginald Fessenden, who lived until 1931. It was from Brant Rock, and the station was to ships at sea on December 24th, Christmas Eve, 1906, with the assistance of his wife, Helen, and his secretary, Miss Benz, and his associate, Mr. Stein. At 9 o'clock in the evening, Fessenden began his broadcast playing Handel's Largo, presumably from his opera Circe or Xerxes, on an Edifone photograph. He then played O Holy Night on his violin, singing the last verses he played. Finally, he read a selection from the Book of Luke, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace to men of goodwill. And may that continue. The area of devastation we're showing, this is taken from the Boston Traveler, is right along the Ocean Bluff, Fieldston, Sunrise Beach area. The Greenbush Dyke. In 1872, a dike was built, the road over which connected Brant Rock with Green Harbor. The project was the subject of heated debate among farmers, who were eager to drain and work the land, and fishermen who claimed the dike would interrupt the river's tidal flow and silt in the mouth of Green Harbor. Despite the controversy, the dike was built, opening thousands of acres of lowland on which hundreds of families live today. We're going to take a jaunt through old Brant Rock right now, an old Ocean Bluff, just some pictures that I've culled from the many books. Chris has two of those here in the library today. They are the history of
Marshfield, the Town of Villages,
yep,
and Marshfield Images of America.
Which I've taken these images from. So 1905 Brant Rock, Ocean Bluff in 1914. The six great inns of Brant Rock, we looked at them briefly on that headstone there. The Fairview, built in 1874. It burned down on St. Patrick's Day 1998, but rebuilt in 2001. The Brant Rock House, built in 1874, torn down in 1838. Excuse me?
1938.
Only one cup, too. Ocean House, Brant Rock Theater, built in 1875, lost a fire on September 5th, 1973.
Who remembers that?
I know. The Pioneer Cottage, built in 1861, renamed the Atlantic House in 1879, and was lost in the Ocean Bluff Great Fire of 1941. And then the Churchill, built in 1866, burnt in 1909, and then the Peace Haven, built in 1903, razed in the 1940s. And I have an asterisk here. The Fairview Inn was originally established as a boarding house for the elite. It became the exclusive and elegant Como Club in the 20s and 30s, offering dining and strolling violinists, followed by gambling at the rear of the building. The club was named after the ship Como, which ran illegal rum along the coast during Prohibition. It is rumored that a tunnel running from beneath the original structure to the ocean was used to deliver the contraband liquor to the Fairview. That's only rumor.
What is it?
Coast Guard Station. Yes. The Peace Haven. That's a big one.
Wow.
Winships.
Yes.
Winships. Today, my dad would take me and the three brothers and the three sisters out to Winships, and we'd get a toy or a model to build for the rainy day so we would stay out of his hair.
Oh.
The Fairview. The old Fairview. The Rex.
Yeah.
that was that there's a bunch of things went on at the Rex. The Churchill Hotel, this is an 1866 photo just after it opened. The Churchill Hotel, roughly in the early part of the 20th century. Right in Starrett's, and this figures prominently into our story tonight. The Ocean Bluff House. St. Anne's by the sea, circa 1940. This is prior to the fire. The Ocean House again. Peterson's, which is, you have the figure of the 1900 up top, 2004 down below. And that today is ice cream. Yep. Again, right in Starrett's. The Ocean Bluff Casino, where we know there was some gambling done. A walk along Old Ocean Bluff, and if you notice how close the houses were to the ocean, they're set back a little now. And the cottages along the boulevard as you look towards Brent Rock Tower. And then,
cottages,
and then go to the next one. The Fieldston Restaurant, anybody remember this?
Yes.
I remember my mother talking about it.
Again, the Ocean Bluff Hotel. Ocean Street, the beach, Ocean Bluff and Brent Rock. From the Army Tower, circa 1943, this photograph taken, looking north. Okay, some historical fires in Marshfield then. In 1773, Tea Rock Hill, British stores of tea were burned, which is near Ocean Street, Moraine Street. Does anybody know where that is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The Boston Tea Party happened on December 16, 1773. It was 3 days later on the 19th that Marshfield burned tea. People don't understand that there are multiple tea parties that took place in the colonies, the 13 colonies, from 1773 through 1774. Sears Building, which was the end of Landing Road, that was in 1919. In 1934, the Convalescent and Chronic Home, which was changed from the old South Shore Hospital in 1926, it burned in March of that year. In 1940, the Winslow House had a fire. The fire we'll be talking about tonight, 1941. 1958, the Kohi Roller Skating Rink, which preceded the family skate rink. 1960, Eli's Linen Store in Brent Rock. You remember that? 1964, Webster Hotel, Landing Road and Carswell Street, which was November 16th of that year. 1970, a house on fire on the island off of Dyke Road. 1972, summer, Chief Robinson, Estes. Is that what happened in 1972? Do you remember that? Was that the year?
That's correct.
Okay. Care to elaborate on that, Chief, or should I move on?
Is my brother in the room?
Is Chief Robinson's brother in the room? No. What do you want to say, Chief?
My brother was cooking popcorn and wasn't paying attention. That's how the fire started.
The Marshfield Country Club. 1978, the Rexicana, burned on September 6th. 1979 and 89, Copeland and Sons Lumberyard. 1981, it was arson, Assumption Church. 1990, the Adelaide Phillips House burned July 9th, and there were some lightning strikes there throughout history. Okay, before we go on, we're going to take the time machine here. So we're going to have you remove your shoes, go through the metal detector. There is a $5 surcharge for a pillow. There are no snacks. Okay, one hit it, Chris. I borrowed this from my friend H.G. Wells. Hopefully it works. We're going to all go back to 1941 now. Here we go.
Here we go.
One more tap, Chris.
Okay.
All right.
Ready?
All right. Take your Dramamine. Let's see. Here we go. All right, one more, Chris. Here we go. All right, we're back to 41.
Oh.
That's right. 1941 was an incredible year. It was an incredible year in baseball. The Yankee Clipper, Joe DiMaggio, one of the greatest center fielders in history, although some people think that Domi, who just died this year, was overshadowed by his older brother. And then you have the greatest hitter that ever lived, Teddy Ballgame, the kid, the splendid splitter. He hit 406 that year. No one's hit 400 since then, and it's remarkable. He was more John Wayne than John Wayne, this guy, okay? This guy went off to World War II. He had a smoking jet he landed. My dad met him in, I think it was Pensacola, during the Korean War, and Didn't recognize him as Ted Williams from Boston. You know, they called my dad Boston Blackie. But anyways, as my dad went to pay off the tab, they said, oh, no, the major paid it. Ted Williams paid it. So and then my aunt, if you go back one more, Chris, and then my aunt chased Ted Williams out of a barbershop one time for his autograph. Joe DiMaggio hitting 56 straight games. So 1941 was just an incredible year in baseball. Also, the 21st, if you were to get your Time magazine that day, that's your cover. A world was at war. Yugoslavia General Dusan Simovic. Also, what's in your morning paper that day? Well, the Nazis are within 30 miles of Athens. 21 British troop transports with thousands drowned or lost. There's a far bomber accused of being a communist on the loose in Mattapan, the Red Scare. There are bomb scares at Logan Airport. The Red Sox undefeated streak comes to an end. They're 5-1 at the hands of the Washington Senators and Steve Sondra. Joe Cronin's hitting 500. Ted Williams 400. Don DiMaggio 444. The Boston Braves pulled three wins and four losses after beating the Philadelphia Phillies. The weather says sunny, dry, and windy. That's key. And there are major fires all across the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and a big one raging through Fort Dix, New Jersey. The newly formed National Guard will be called out to help at Camp Edwards in Sandwich Woods and at Fort Devens, and the Germans firebomb Plymouth, England. And that came right back at them 4 years later. Okay, so what's going on 1941 during this day? It's a very, very dry day in Marshfield, one of the driest in years. You've got over 250 fires are reported. All the state woods are closed. What's ironic is last year, on the same date, there were over 200 fires reported on April 19, 2008, in Massachusetts. Acting Governor Horace Cahill, Governor Salt and Stalls in Washington, says that one fire is being reported every 20 minutes. For the Quabbin Dam, trees felled by the 1938 hurricane lay as matchsticks, kindling wood, to fuel the fire there and other places. 2 billion trees were felled in New England alone during the Great Hurricane in 1938. All pilots are called upon to spot and report fires from the air. All hunting, trapping, fishing, suspended. Here's the one. All firearms dispensing prohibited. Couldn't leave your house with a gun. And bear with me, I'm going to read these towns so you know who was suffering a fire. Acton, Ayr, Barnstable, Barry Plains, Belchertown, Billerica, Blackstone, Brimfield, Boxford, Burlington, Catawba, Cohasset, Concord, Draken, Fiskdale, Groveland, Harvard, Holliston, Hopedale, Hingham, Ipswich, Lancaster, Leominster, Lexington, Maynard, Medway, Mendon, Methuen, Millville, Milton, New Braintree, North Andover, North Bridgewater, North Uxbridge, Norwell, Oakham, Pepperell, Randolph, Rutland, Sandwich, Shirley, Sutton, Swampscott, Topsfield, Upton, Westwood, Whitman, Winchendon, Wilmington. Fort Devens reported 8 fires that day, and only somebody from Massachusetts could get the right pronunciation.
Very good.
Let's look at the weather conditions. 1941 is the driest year since 1888. 1888 was a very bad weather year. There are 2 major blizzards, the blizzard of 88 that took place in that, and then something known as the children's blizzard, where a teacher froze to death with a number of students tied to ropes as they tried to leave the schoolhouse. April was a very dry month, with less than an inch of rain in the last 4 weeks. Don't know that feeling, do we? The morning of April 21st was very windy with gusts up to 40 miles per hour. I could see Chief would say that you got the wind blowing, you got dry conditions, it's bad. But you say, hey, the fire was in Ocean Bluff. Boston Traveler, the newspaper, called it the Ocean Bluffs Fire. The Boston Record called it the Ocean Bluff Fire. The Boston Herald, wrong again, called it the Brent Rock Fire. The Boston Post, the Great Shore Fire. The Marshfield Mariner, 1973, in a reprint, called it the Great Brant Rock Fire. Marvelous article, by the way. Technically, nothing burned in Brant Rock, only in Fieldston and Ocean Bluff. So, it began just before 2 p.m. at the corner of Ocean Street and Plymouth. Or did it? We either think it started at 1:40 p.m. that day or 1:50, depending upon who you talk to. Now, people have asked, was it a cigarette? Was it mischievous arson due to school vacation beginning that Monday? Was it a broken glass bottle? Boston Post. First one, the cigarette. A gas station owner who owned the gas station relatively where Courtney's is, and that gas station that pumps a short gallon is now. Trust me, it pumps a short gallon. I know, I measure. He said that he saw a cigarette flicked out of the car into the reeds, okay, that started the fire. And then I had a woman here in my lecture, lovely woman, who told me she was that day as a child behind the car that saw the person throw the cigarette. Are you here tonight? Okay. And then finally, a broken glass bottle, according to the Boston Traveler, Boston Post rather, and again, they said that deflected sunlight through broken glass lit the reeds on fire. And as I've been quoted as saying, that's only happened once before, and that was on an episode of Lassie. So originally, we thought that that's basically where it started, just off of Plymouth at the bend of Ocean in Plymouth there. That a grass fire started near Fieldston Lodge and swept into the tall horse grass in Dykes Meadow. The gas station owner at Ocean Street in Plymouth, who called in the fire, claims that he saw a cigarette butt thrown out of a car window. As I mentioned, the Boston Post claimed that the sun reflecting through broken glass ignited the fire, yada, 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 Lassie. Now, Father O'Connor is here, and Father Bill O'Connell handed me a picture last year when I did this lecture in Marshfield. And I looked at it and I couldn't believe it, because here, and correct me, and I need some of our longtime residents here, this is ground zero right here. And this, correct me if I'm wrong, is the bend on Ocean Street. And is this Plymouth? Am I right, folks? So where does that place that? And whoever threw that cigarette has an arm better than Dwight Evans. Does anybody want to help me out there? This is Gerard's is what? Where's Gerard? Here? Okay. So it starts, it's bizarre. I mean, this is it. This is ground zero. This is where it began. It was ignited. So maybe all those stories, the guy who had the gas station down here, again, if he saw it, where was
smoke down there on the lower corner, though? The smoke down the lower corner, the center there.
Yeah.
Right there, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, that's the corner.
Father's
got his hand up.
Could have been
Turtle.
Father's got his hand up.
We have a comment.
Yeah. In looking at that picture, I blew it up. And there were three houses that used to be on the left side of the 139 coming down to the beach. I can remember it as a kid. And they were basically the same design. Second floor with the full dormer on them, and they sort of been altered a little bit, porches have been on them and the rest. And if you look closely, you can see those three houses at the time. There's a lot more that's been built up later, but the fire seems to be located approximately adjacent to the second house. Mm-hmm. And it's probably 100, 200 yards down from Nasserola's farm.
Okay, 100 to 200 yards from Nasserola Rollins Farm, coming towards the beach.
Okay.
So, sir, good catch here. Now, I never noticed this. Is there a possibility that we're talking about two fires that merged?
Two fires.
Wow,
yeah.
Breakthrough. In order for it to merge? Well, eventually the wind does change and blow from west to east.
Okay.
And I mean, this looks like a southwest wind blowing right now. Fascinating. I learned something today. Wow. So, problem is, the speed of the fire left virtually no time to react to it. People were stunned. Like the hurricane of 38, where a junior meteorologist, Charles Pierce, 28 years old, says, "I think that this hurricane in the Caribbean is going to shoot up the coast and hit New England and New York." And he was waved off saying, "Son, a hurricane will never hit New England." Well, this here, this is Ruth Publicover. Getting out of the house was first and foremost. There was no time to gather belongings. Most of the residents only had what they had on their shoulders. A resident said it went up just like that. Can we go back to that for a moment? Look at the terror here, Chris. This guy here's got some sort of canister.
The table stand.
You know, there was a water pressure issue here in Marshfield during the time of the fire. this is the picture of the inferno well underway from the air, and you can just see how it, it's scorched right to the beach. And people, I've been told, we're going to hear your stories after tonight's lecture, in order to get from one area, had to literally walk along the beach. So there was a mad scramble, and before long, a street was being engulfed. A whole street was being engulfed every 20 minutes. And look at the people, the panic here. This guy was lucky to grab something. A poor woman there trying to throw things out on her lawn. She's reacting properly, and that was the key in this fire, is the people recognized that this was a conflagration. This was a monster, and they didn't do stupid things and try to go back into the house. They saw that it was coming. They tried to save what they could, and then they moved away. A firestorm, the likes that had never been seen in these parts, took off like an unleashed dog. Houses almost exploded. And that wasn't due to natural gas. The gas company tried to shut off the gas and stay out in front of the blaze. But because the wind and the dry conditions, houses just went up. And the embers, the burnt embers, were fanned to flame, went to the next roof, and to the next, and to the next. And as you can see, people moving their cherished belongings. And you're not talking about multimillionaires here. They're in smaller and smaller homes. So Silas Wright, had the presence of mind and the humility to call for help. Now, I hearken back to my story about Nantucket firefighters, how they fight over who had the honor of fighting the fire. And in that era, there was some pride where the police would hesitate to call for help because it might reflect poorly on their department's performance, that they couldn't handle an incident within their town, or a fire department couldn't handle the fire. Well, this guy, Silas Wright, and the fire chief, recognized that, hey, we've got an issue here, and he put the call out, and because he did that, and racing up and down the street, letting people know that there's a fire, people that didn't even know that a fire was going on in their houses, that he saved so many lives. This man's a hero. Old Engine 3, better known as the Old Girl, okay, and Duxbury firefighters work at a conflagration in the Brent Rock section of Marshfield in 1941. She was lost in the fire. We'll see a photograph of that in a moment. And she was replaced by the Marshfield Fire Department. Blown embers ignited adjacent houses. Other heroes include State Fire Marshal Stephen Garrity, Commissioner Eugene McSweeney. These were men that came to the aid of Marshfield. As soon as they heard about the fire, they jumped in their automobiles and headed there and did whatever they could do to get the Red Cross activated, to help with evacuation of residents, to bivouac them. It was the movement of these people during this fire, and they didn't hesitate, is what saved lives. Police Chief William Pratt, again with Silas Wright now. Yep. Police Chief Pratt, Fire Chief Silas Wright, both of them. And it was Chief Pratt raced up and down Ocean Street, warning residents about the fire. Huh, what? And they look out their door, and they see this big elephant trunk of a plume of smoke coming out, and they got them out of their house. This saved several lives, as very early on, most did not even know that a fire was raging. So raise a glass to Chief Pratt and Chief Wright. You're here. Firefighting was hampered by dry weather conditions, heavy winds, poor equipment, and very poor water pressure in Marshfield. It's hard to put a trickle and put a fire out with a trickle when you don't have the water pressure necessary. Backfires were set by firefighters, and they backfired. The backdraft fueled the conflagration. So you have backfires that backfire and a backdraft. And backfires were set in Damrell's fire. Didn't work, trying to knock down the fire. And with Great Fire in Chicago in 1871, didn't work there, and it didn't work in Marshfield. Molten lead dripped from the wires in a lethal spray. Imagine watching everything that you own go up in flames. I know that we're in a materialistic world. I'm saying we're the younger people, the folks that have lived through the Great Depression, that have lived through the good times of the Great War, the Good War, don't necessarily have that cling to this material possession. But imagine the little prized possessions that you had gone in an instant. Heartbreaking. Everything, I mean everything, burned. Bicycles, houses, right down to the rock foundations and the cement foundations, streets, the macadam streets, buckled, front lawns burned. Anything within the vicinity was ashen. But you know what happened? Neighbors helped neighbors. And I often wonder would that happen today. I want to say that maybe looters would help looters, but neighbors help neighbors. John Shaw helps Mr. and Mrs. Samuel Capon of Ocean Bluffs, and I put that on. But you can see the man helping them there. All he has is a wheelbarrow full of clothes. It looks like a laundry basket. And that's his whole life. His whole life is right there in that wheelbarrow. And they stood and they fought side by side along Ocean Street. The firemen from multiple departments. They didn't have a viable instantaneous radio network at that point. Walkie-talkies, they had phone lines. And for the departments to know what to do and to take instructions from Chief Wright is a testimony to the teamwork that took place during the Great Brant Rock Fire. There was a field where residents went to assess, stage, and regroup. Many hugs were exchanged when loved ones found loved ones. Does anybody know where this area was? Anybody? Father Bill? It's in Fieldston?
It might have been up in Thomas's Field, which was up around the old back of Winchip's. Off of Plymouth Avenue, up in that area, the field that went up to a stone wall and became Marshfield Acres later.
Okay.
That's about the only place I could think of that there was a field.
Okay. Quote, it felt like some British seaport firebombed by the Luftwaffe. And again, that article about the Germans were beginning incendiary raids in Britain. Hey, they started it and they got it back. They got their comeuppance. But that was what this man said, that they thought they were being firebombed. 17 blocks, 2 square miles, 600 structures, 446 houses, some say 443 houses, gone. And go back, Chris, one second. I think, is that St. Anne's going up? Okay. Robert Bowles. Selectman Robert Bowles, another hero. We were licked in Holy City. Holy City was wiped out. And I want to say right here, and I think I have a slide, but money that's usually appropriated for burning off that marsh grass every year, $300 was set aside. Well, guess what happened in 1941? We're going to wipe out that line item off the budget for this year. We don't need it. That was 3 days before the Great Brant Rock Fire. In Holy City, as I mentioned, small cottages bunched together near St. Anne's. They went up. Look at how close they are, okay?
Yeah.
And they're. You know, we're not talking about these elaborate McMansions here that sit on the waterfront with large boats and docks. We're talking about poor folks that want to catch a summer breeze on a hot summer day, that's all. The fire station on Massasoit Street was spared.
Isn't that amazing?
Combo one, combination one, everything burned except the firefighters. Providence. Now, you can think about that, talk about Providence, that was their central area of command. And if that did go up, that would have sent them into disarray, miscommunication. It would have been bedlam, but since Combo 1 was spared, still there today, this helped them knock down the fire. The irony at the height of the big fire is shown. John Troy, who is second from the left, is a member of the Rockland School Committee. And he's helping directing a hose line on the cottage of Miss Agnes Kelleher, chairman of the town school committee. So you got people from school committee from different towns helping out here. The winds, as I mentioned, urged the blaze on. The byline here, the liner note, burning furiously with only the whim of the wild wind, alliteration, to dictate its fury, the flames in this Brant Rock cottage of a typical example of the manner in which the fire spread from home to home in the area yesterday afternoon. The water pressure was terrible, despite the fact that the water tower held over 339,000 gallons of water. Marshfield police officer John Gawley saw smoke returning from Plymouth on a shopping trip with his wife. When he realized that it was his neighborhood that was on fire, he parked the car, they went inside, only having enough time to grab a change of clothes for themselves. As they got back out to their car, their house was engulfed in flames. He had to drive through a fence, a locked fence, to get out and escape. And then this is the famous photo. It was in the Boston Globe and Boston.com today and was in going.com. Mr. and Mrs. Charles Bennett, They lost 9 houses. Now, these don't look like rich landlords. These look like broke people now. And this, Mrs. Bennett here, this is what they owned. Watching the fire, everything that they lost is gone. And of course, the major quote that was heard during the Brant Rock fire was, "I had no insurance." Mr. and Mrs. John Pratt, the newlyweds had just moved to Marshfield from Waltham only 3 days earlier before the fire lost everything. Fire hoses melted and caught fire. Over 70 year-round families had to be evacuated and relocated. And again, I go back to Selectman Bowles, Commissioner Garrity. Everybody chipped in with the Red Cross, although I heard a story actually about the Red Cross, that they were selling cups of coffee, whereas they were giving them out free at Wrighton Starrett's. Helpless residents can only watch and pray. The folklore, and this is again, the folklore tells of the only injury recorded aside from singed eyebrows was an ash in the eye, but 13 Plymouth firefighters were treated on the scene for smoke inhalation. The sound was like the low growl of a hungry lion, is a quote. 30 cottages went up in the first 30 minutes. 300 went up in the next hour. It was the worst fire in New England since the Great Salem Fire of 1914 that took 2,000 structures. Taking coffee and donuts at Wright Stairs, moments later after this photo was taken for the people fighting the fire and residents of the area, moments later, Wright Stairs was gone. Structures burned and buckled and folded and collapsed within minutes. And of course, once a structure collapses, it sends sparks airborne, taken by the wind, to set off another structure. So the coastline then is ablaze. I'll be telling a story, I think, in a little while about a fisherman who sees this fire at sea. Now, let's just take a look at this one here. My friend over here picked out the other smoke plumes. What's going on up there? It looks like smoke, doesn't it? And this is after everything's pushed down. This is at the end of the fire. Everything's pushed down. The newly formed National Guard was called out. They were very busy in their initial deployment. I'm going to ask this in a second about a flying boat, if anybody remembers it then. And there's a lot of folklore associated with this. There it is. Okay, so I've been told that a Coast Guard flying boat circled overhead taking photographs. Does anybody that was there, raise your hand if you were there during that day of the fire. Okay, I've asked people if they remember, recall a Coast Guard flying boat circling overhead, a clipper. And two of the residents said they do not. What? Gordon? This is a... That's a random photo of a flying boat. So the losses...
I'm sorry.
Can you go back, Chris? Losses of entire streets happened in 20-minute intervals from street to street to street. So the brilliance... She saved her husband's ashes, which were in an urn on the mantel, and her fire insurance had expired 2 days earlier. Oh. Two thoughtful and to this date unknown schoolgirls from Newton, and if you're here tonight, let me know, helped evacuate Mrs. Publicover and her valuable possessions. Is anybody from Newton here tonight? Smoke was seen from Nantucket, from Boston, and from Provincetown. Images of desperation and devastation, if we just take a look, we saw some of these earlier, but they're just a snapshot and a montage of different photographs. Some of the quality is poor indeed, but it just shows you the devastation and the raging fire. And then, the next day, a lot of people came from Abington. And at first I thought maybe Abington Village, but a lot of homeowners in Abington also owned a cottage property in Marshfield. And they came the next day, and they couldn't get into the area until the National Guard and the police allowed them to matriculate into the area. Losses were total. There was nearly nothing to salvage. Nothing to salvage. In fact, Biff Henderson, who's not here tonight, told me he was given, 25 cents for every chimney that he knocked down the next day on the foundations. Winship store had just been fully stocked for the summer before it burnt. And it was, okay, and yeah, burnt to the ground. It was difficult to find your own foundation, or should I say, your own cinder pile that used to be your house. As far as the eye can see, or as far as the lenses of the camera extended above, the ruins of destroyed cottages stretch out on the shoreline of Brent Rock. This photo is showing only the chimneys and foundations which remain, was taken in Ward Fieldston. And taken from a song by Roger Daltrey, "After the fire still burns." The casino fireplace. Now, does anybody want to, I've been told that's the casino fireplace, but Father Bill, do you agree with that?
That's his family's fireplace.
It's not the casino fireplace. Father Bill, can you tell me about that house there?
Yeah, we were there. Actually, the property was Hewitt's Point. The cottage my father bought in 1936 was the Hewitt's Point cottage. You can see trees that are there. I identify it very well. The trees used to be in front of a Dr. Boutwell's house, which was two doors away from ourselves. He had a wall. You can see the wall. It's on the right-hand side. And you can see the bend of the land going around to Hammerock and Situate and up in there. You're looking down Ocean Street, all the way on the telephone pole.
Yes,
Trusco,
So, Father Bill, I will correct that. That is the O'Connor residence. A resident said Hitler couldn't have done worse. And again, as I mentioned before, it looks like a village devastated by the Germans in World War II. War in all its fury, and again, war is on people's mind. The fire could spread no greater devastation over a resort than the leaping flames, which leveled 500 cottages yesterday afternoon in the Fieldston Brant Rock section, and left behind bleak ruins such as the bare trees and the tumbled chimney shown above. And then, St. Anne's. The lead in the stained glass windows turned molten, and the windows exploded outward. St. Anne's by the Sea Mass was held in the Fieldston Ballroom for 1941 and 42. Automobile tires melted onto the road. Now, do you remember old girl? The one from Duxbury that was fighting the fire? Well, the fire got old girl. And Marshfield Fire Department in the town of Marshfield replaced that for them. Within an hour after the fire began, New England Telephone and Telegraph, with help from Chief Pratt, had hung an emergency wire from the old schoolhouse converted police station. So that's when New England Telephone and Telegraph jumped into action and hung a line just for Police Chief Pratt. And the Brockton Gas and Plymouth Electric Companies got out ahead of the fire as it was raging, shutting off gas and electricity, and collecting copper wire, which was very valuable. It took less than 3 minutes for the casino to burn to the ground. The Ocean Bluff House was razed in 5 minutes. Police warned about exploding projectiles and missiles being launched from the casino. They're talking about exploding bottles of beer. And of course, the wrath of the conflagration, the fire recodified zoning laws. Cottages could no longer be built on top of one another or with cheap, dry beech wood. Chief Silas Wright lost his home and his store with Charles Sterrett. And this is Inspector Byron Hall and Postmaster Charles Sterrett looking at the safe. It saves many valuables. John A. Gaffey, a year-rounder, lost everything. Landlord Charles Lowell lost 19 cottages. They had to count chimneys in order to determine how many houses were burned, and kids were given 50 cents, I said 25 cents, 50 cents for each one that was knocked down. By that evening, every homeless family had been provided with shelter. Selectman Robert S. Bowles commanded the bivouac. And it ended just after 5 p.m. at the corner of Ocean and Samoset Street. Captain Everett B. Wood and the crew from the Plymouth Fire Department saved Brant Rock. And what I mean by saved Brant Rock, not that the other guys didn't do a fantastic job, but he was the vanguard out ahead of it, and it was moving towards Brant Rock, And he told his men to stay, hold, and fight. This is what he said. His order at the corner of Ocean and Samoset was, we will hold our ground. And they did. Plymouth knocked it down. That's another fire department with a lot of grand heritage, by the way. Police Chief Everett B. Wood and his Brave Fire Company knocked it down at dusk. So as the sun was setting, that's Samoset. Now, it ended just after 5 p.m., and the Boston Traveler, quote, and you know, they use a lot of poetic and flowery language, but it's beautiful. The orange-red flames blended with the orange-red of the western sky and setting sun. For a minute, the sun held sway. And my dad remembers going down with his grandfather the night of the fire and still seeing the glow. He was stopped, if you know where Assumption Church is today, where Canal cuts off at Careswell, I believe, that's where they were cordoned off. And if they wanted to walk in, which he did, they had to walk from that point in. And they walked, I think, a mile or half, then they walked back to the car and said, we'll wait until they let us through. But you remember seeing that orange glow. Then, continue on with that, as it dipped below the horizon, the flames replaced its brilliance in light color, a moving painting of tragedy and beauty. So there's that red glow right here. Again, that's the area. $300, as I mentioned, cost $1.25 million. That's 1941 dollars. 2 square miles, gone. We can just look at that, but we'll go over the roads in a moment. Gone with the wind and sparks. The casino, St. Anne's by the Sea, Ocean Bluff House Hotel, Bristol Bakery, the Beach and Ocean Variety Store, Wright and Starrett Store, the Police and Fire Rest Station, the Beach Bluff Post Office at Wright and Starrett's, Winship's Drug Store, which was newly stocked for the summer, the Shorehaven Hotel, the First National Store, Totten's Beauty Parlor, which was just renovated, and the Fire Station Combo 1 was spared. There are no deaths or major injuries. One heart attack, some smoke inhalation, many singed eyebrows, and a lot of broken hearts. 2 square miles were burned from 6th and Ocean to Samoset Street. Holy City, Sunrise Beach, and Marshfield Beach were wiped out. Fieldston, Wrexham, spared. Again, 446 houses, 96 garages, 12 stores, 2 hotels, a casino, a church, and a post office were consumed. Sir, if you could just, there we go. 15% of Marshfield's total value was wiped out. 15% of their total value wiped out. $1.25 million in damage. Zoning laws will be recodified, lot space, building materials, etc. The popping beer bottles and cans at the casino became a fusillade of missiles. Quote, hand grenades, spouting foam 30 feet into the air with scalding liquid, and residents were warned. As I mentioned, smoke was seen from Provincetown, Boston, Cape Cod, Lynn, Nantucket. And this is the story I want to tell you about. An inbound fishing vessel. When he was coming in, first he thought the Boston was on fire. Then he thought Scituate was on fire. Then he knew it was Brant Rock, and then he saw it was my house. The glow on that night sky was a blood red. Gawkers and residents forced to walk a few miles just to see the destruction. Most had to travel along the beach to get up and down the fire corridor. And this is folklore. You'll laugh at this. Some say birds don't nest there anymore in Butterflies or Bear. I was told by one who attended the Okay, here are your fire departments. I'd like to give a roll call here and salute them. Kingston, Duxbury, Falmouth, Bourne, Brockton, Norwalk, Cohasset, Scituate, Rockland, Whitman, Abington, Plymouth, Shawnee Forest, Miles Standish State Forest, Hanover, Middleborough, State Conservation Department, Bridgewater, Weymouth, Hingham, Braintree, Randolph, Holbrook, and of course Marshfield, save Brant Rock. Go back one, Chris, with just one. All out was not called until noon the following day, and these fire departments reported to the fire up to 40 miles away. In fact, I believe it was the Miles Standish State Forest. It was like a Beverly Hills truck. He'd go from town to town. Men were jumping on board. They had men climbing all over like mosquitoes around a bug lamp coming into town. The movement of the firestorm, Ocean Street, 6th Road, 5th Road, 4th Road, 3rd Road, 2nd Road, 1st Road, Beach Avenue, Everson Village District, South Abington Avenue, Shepherd Avenue, Seminole Street, Saconnet Street, Setucket Street, Saginaw Street, Chickatobit Street, Massasoit Street, Shawmut Street partial, and Samoset Street at the tip of it. McGannam roads, fire hoses, shoes, wires, tires melted in the heat. The Brockton Gas Company and Commonwealth Electric, as I mentioned, got out ahead of the blaze, turning off gas and electricity and collecting the wire. I guess, you know, the serendipity of what draws people to these things, and I was shocked when I looked, there were two Horrigans that were involved in this fire in the 40s. Mary Horrigan on Ocean Street, Mrs. Nona Horrigan from Abington, small world, because I was told that my name was changed at Ellis Island from Harrigan to Horrigan. That's my family heritage. And they lost everything to all these people. Anybody know where this is? Good. Good. And it's the kids at St. Anne's, right, that take care of this, right? And a beautiful monument, but it states there, the fire started near the junction of Plymouth Ave and Ocean Street. I guess we can say one of the fires did, at Burton and Samoset, destroying 446 houses, 96 garages, 12 stores, 2 hotels, casino, post office, and church. Yeah, a close-up of that, and very well-maintained, nice, and it's right at the juncture. Of course, if you're going to go visit it and sit on the bench, be very, very careful crossing the street, because people tend to speed up when they see people in crosswalks. Oh, has anybody figured out why motorcycles have to be so loud?
No.
Okay, thank you. Well, that's the Great Ocean Bluff Fire, and we'll hold right now, maybe throw the lights on, and then hear some personal recollections, questions, and stories. So if we could,
did you get the lights
friend,
again, sir?
Turn that on. We did get our AC back, didn't we? Yes, any questions?
Yeah, how long from the time it started until it basically got under control? I know you said the all-out was the next day.
The official all-out was noon the following day.
Yeah, but until it was right.
Right. When Everett Wood and the Plymouth guys knocked it down, it was just after 5 o'clock. And so you're talking, this is how quick it was, about 3.5 hours. Yeah. So it moved quickly. 3.5 hours, 600 structures. That's a 200th an hour almost. Does anybody have any questions, comments? Does anybody remember their parents talking about it, cousins? Yes.
What was the land acreage? Do you know?
2 square miles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we got to do math.
I don't any records.
Math.
I couldn't
wow.
Couldn't tell you. How many, what'd you say, sir?
It would be 1280 if it was 2 square miles.
Okay, there you go. Sir.
Wow.
You could ask me
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about all those other roads? If it started up in Plymouth.
Can we, Chris, try to go back? Yeah, let's.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to be able to see, but that's a very good question. If you notice in the opening picture, do you remember the marsh where we saw that bloom of smoke? It moved across the marsh and picked up at 6th Road. So, like a tornado or a microburst in this area where somebody can have their house devastated, knocked down, it just. A miracle, it leaps over houses. And I've seen that in major fires. In Chicago, what happened? In the Great San Francisco Fire, which there happened to be a little earthquake at the same time, but it was the Great Fire that destroyed San Francisco. That happened too. Edifices and structures unscathed. Does anybody else have any? Yes, sir.
Did the wind die down or something to save the.
Yes, the wind did turn. The wind turned. It blew out in the southwest, directly west, and then eventually it became.
So that scared the houses on the other side of 139.
Right, it started blowing in on it, and that's how they knocked it down, but they contained it. But the wind did change that day, and started, it died down from 40 mile per hour gusts. At one point, it was consistently blowing from 20 to 30 miles per hour, and then it did die down, and I think that had a lot to do with the setting sun.
Could have been worse than that.
Yes, sir.
You said earlier why motorcycles were so loud. Is that because of fire engines years ago, so you could hear them coming?
I'm not sure. It's just that. I
know that the fire engines were the only ones that could leave and not have a muffler.
It's well. I'm sorry if I offend somebody, but in my town, the motorcycle is the chariot of the imbecile. Oh, look! Some St. Anne's. Oh, look. Josephine has brought in this. May we pass this around, Josephine? Josephine has brought in a wonderful montage of St. Anne's by the Sea, which is still there. Catholics, welcome. welcome back. But if you want to pass that around, take a look at it. It's a wonderful montage, Josephine. I really appreciate that. Does anybody else have any questions? Yes, sir.
You're not going to like me, Mr. Hoffman.
We don't either.
I'm from Duxbury. And Engine 3, the old girl, which is pictured there, I also had that picture along with another Duxbury firefighter who was retired. That engine is sitting intact in the fire station annex behind the headquarters fire station in Duxbury.
Give us back our money.
He made it.
What she says, give us back our money.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
He's good.
There was a Duxbury Model T or Model A, which one has? Okay. That was destroyed in the fire, and through the benevolence of the town of Mashfield, they did replace that truck. Okay.
What was destroyed again, please? What was?
A Duxbury truck, a Model A Ford, was destroyed in the fire. That's an American LaFrance, 500-gallon pump. Still
Chris, can you just click off the slide just over here with a use the pad and hit the left mouse. Just click it once. Good. So this here is old girl. Do you agree?
Old girl.
Okay. But the burned out, the famous photo is not old girl. That engine that we see in the famous photo is what that you.
It was an old Model T or Model A Ford.
Which begs the question: who owned that then?
Duxbury.
Okay. It just wasn't old girl. Okay. Now I get it.
Mashfield replaced it with another either Model A or Model T Ford.
Okay. Okay?
And that truck that Mashfield gave to Duxbury is now owned by the deputy chief of the. I get Alzheimer's. I remember the fire. Is owned by the deputy chief of the Westport, Massachusetts fire department, who has totally refurbished it, and he mailed me a picture of it last summer, and I was very upset because he's done a beautiful job of restoring the truck. But guess what it says on the hood?
Westport Fire Corps,
Mashfield.
Mr. Maskey, here's my card. Maybe we could talk. Give me a call, or do you have email? Do you, or just give me a call. We can talk. Okay. Yeah, we'd love to talk. That's great. Excellent story. Huh? Bango is another myth. Does anybody else have a question, comment, or a correction?
Is that picture in front of the Red Rock Chapel?
I think that the chapel's right over here. If I'm not right, this is where the new stop sign that finally came into play, where it should have been 30 years ago, where people stop. You go. No, you go. I call it the you go stop. You go. No, you go.
I call it, they go the wrong way.
Yeah.
But, so isn't that along the road, isn't that considered Brent Rock? They call it Ocean Bluff in the map?
That's Davis's house. It's right up from about 10 houses up from us. It was along to Davis's. They just sold it.
Was the old Coast Guard station here?
No.
We're are we looking towards Ocean Bluff?
No, the Davis's house is near Sanderson.
Yes,
Davis's project.
Hey, if I don't have GPS my TomTom on, I am totally lost. All my cartography is gone. Yes, sir. Yes.
What was that? Was that property was where those edifices are now? Was that wiped out?
Yes. Again, I'm relying on faith of the residency.
Up to that corner?
Yeah. Beyond that, way beyond. Yeah, way beyond. Down by the wall.
So it was wiped out. Do you remember what was in that area before?
I can't remember what was
there. Oh, it's parking lot for Wrighton Stearns. Which was on the other side. Okay, sure. Samoset is at the bend. If you were to go down where the fence begins, where the stone, where the cement wall is, I believe Samoset's right there as you turn the corner. Just yes, Father Bell. One up arrow, a couple, Chris, and that's just it's what Father Bell said is that blue house that we're going to show just on the. Here, let me see.
Yeah, I'm just looking on the slide.
Yeah. Huh? OK.
Okay. Let me. I just want to bring up that photo, folks, one moment. Okay, and we're going to go up arrow. Just trying to get that photo that Father Bill was talking about, that blue house. Can you do me a favor, Chris? Just keep. Yeah. We're going to try to bring that photo up one last time to take a look at. This is where it was knocked down. And, of course, the time machine working right now. It's taking us back to, okay, here we keep going. We have to toggle it down. This is the lecture redux here. We good? Do we do it in 5 minutes? Does anybody, while we're trying to get to that photo, have any questions? Yes. Did they?
And my parents' honeymoon on the new cottage when it was rebuilt, and I live in it now.
Wow! All right. Does any? Yes, sir.
Give me. I came in a little late. Did you determine what was the cause that started it?
Again, a flick cigarette butt out the window. We have a gas station owner says he saw one thrown out, and he actually yelled at the people. We have a woman to fall behind in said car. I'm not sure if the same car seeing the cigarette butt flicked out. The Boston Post, I believe, was the one with broken glass where refracted sunlight was on a dry reed. But we looked at the photo earlier, and we saw two starting points of the fire. And so that was not a little girl, as we mentioned. And then as Chris toggles through, does anybody else have any questions, comments? Yes?
I was just wondering about the...
That's the house, huh, Father, right there? That's where the fire stopped, 431. Wow. Excellent. Yes, I'm sorry.
I was wondering about the reconstruction of the area, and was there any government help at that time, or how long did it take before, you know, that whole area came back, would you say?
Good question. You're talking about the rebuilding effort. Insurance company, yes, Father Bill. Yeah.
Very few houses were built during that time from April to December. And the building was really restricted until 1945, 1946 is when it started in Boston.
Okay. So post-war reconstruction. So there were a lot of empty lots, Father Bill, during the war. Interesting. Yes, sir.
Not to beat a dead horse, but to get back to where the fire started, people keep asking. You got the picture right there of the airplane, and you discussed it earlier, of a big fire north up near the private theater.
Mm-hmm.
Then you didn't see it. There's another fire down to the left, which is more to the cottages.
Yes.
Then further on, there's another picture where you said, I don't know where this smoke has come from. I think that smoke up there is coming from the theater, and the little one down below is the one that probably caused the main fire right along the beach.
Okay.
That's where it is. Look at that.
Sure. So this is the first one that you were talking about, sirs. As the fire came from here and raged through, what you're saying here is those smoke plumes. And again, this is a very poor quality photograph. That this is the fire that you're assuming.
The fire up in the right hand corner didn't burn all those houses.
No, it didn't.
And the one up in the right hand corner probably came from the drive-in
theater. Yeah, I think so. I could accept that premise, Father Bill. Any comments? Oh, yeah, the plane picture. That's we'll toggle back. That fire could be harmless. I hate to use the term, but innocuous, such that it doesn't figure in the folklore of any of the newspaper accounts of the day because it was a forest fire that they put out, or it was maybe stopped by the dike, or it hit marshland.
But what's any better than the airplane picture? That's pretty significant, I think.
Yep. It's right off. Okay, this is the first. We'll go back before, but just before we move on this, if we look at the fire here, so you can see the raging fire here, but there looks to be smoke plumes over here. Okay, so it does. It looks like there are two sources of ignition here. Here we go. Okay, so let me just. Let's just take a look at one more time here. So. Right, so we're talking, here's the...
I bet that's a culprit right there.
Okay, and what's frightening is that this guy's taking a picture before the fire starts, and I made a comment about planes were asked to spot fires and call them in. And we're saying this is near the drive-in movie theater. And my assumption up until this gentleman pointed this out was that this moved across here and blew out Ocean Bluff. But we all see the smoke plume there, and it's literally, I mean, you're talking in its infancy. Yes, Father.
If you look at the upper fire, isn't that the marshland off to your left?
Yes.
So it would be difficult for that to jump the marsh.
Correct. Correct. Yes, Father. So, Father, do you think, what would you, if you were to make an assessment or an educated guess, would you say that it traveled this way?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so you're saying that whatever this is, it's a non-starter. It's okay, so that's, and that would go with the gusting of the wind, and it's just, see, the wind would shift, blowing more to the west, it blew out of southwest, and more to the east, actually. Right. True. And it didn't. Sixth Road, Father, is about here. Not even in the picture. So we're okay. Interesting. This, we're learning here. This is what's great about this thing. This is called living history, folks. We get people to put their perspective on this. Does anybody else have any comments? I know that you were going to say something.
I was going to say, my great uncle, Brad White, he owned 5 cottages. Lost 3 completely. 1 is still up at the end, around the corner from Plymouth and Ocean Street. It's still
near
standing.
Courtney's.
And then another one is right on Ocean Street, and that burned a little, but I mean, it's still there. And I live on Chickatobit Avenue. They called it Chickatobit Street, but it is Chickatobit Avenue, at the corner where Winship's is. And so most of the houses on the street where I now live burned, but my house didn't. It's part of the Thomas Farm, another big farm there. And then across the street, there's another Thomas house. And that's where I live.
So yours was spared.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Was spared. I didn't live there. It was
sure. But the structure itself was spared. Does anybody else have any comments, questions?
How much separation between your house and the houses around you?
Did you hear that question? How much separation between your house and the houses around?
Well, the Thomas Farm is, it did have 2 lots of land. They sold 1. So there was quite a bit of land around that. And there's a double lot where my house is. But right across the street, that house burned down, and the houses up past me burned down. I don't know why that house was spared. I have no idea.
Providence. Absolutely.
Somebody asked about how close to the gill. If you go up onto Bay Avenue, the Green Harbor section, some of those old places.
Sure.
You can spit out of somebody's kitchen in the living room next door.
And I'm sure that's happened on July 3rd after midnight. But does anybody else have any comments? Yes.
Where was the casino and the hotel you were talking about?
The casino and the hotel is Father, the casino? Father Bill, where was the casino exactly? In
which casino?
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah. It was on the piece of property that is now with the Ocean Bus Packet.
Interesting. Yes.
Why is the area called Holy City? Do you know?
Holy City? I'm guessing. Father Bill, the question was, why is the area called Holy City? I'm guessing because of St. Anne's by the Sea and the cottages?
No, that wasn't it.
Oh, this is a trick question.
Because there was anything but holy. There were so many.
Riff Raff?
It was named originally among those who were renting there, which were mostly young people from Boston that came down and rented a cottage, because that's where everybody that was young came because of the Texarkana.
Definitely not Holy City.
And the houses were so close together that you could send a beer across to the fellow next door if he wanted to, right through the windows. That's how close.
Wow.
But originally, they were nicknaming it Sin City, right. And somebody said to them, don't do
that. Oh, property values.
So then it became Holy City.
Interesting. Wow.
You know, my husband said once that when usually those little cottages in Holy City, there were girls in one, fellows in
one,
that.
And
up until a certain hour at night.
If a guy needed to have his pants pressed or something, he'd put the pants out the window and one of the girls in the other cottage would give it a press.
That's right.
That wouldn't happen today. Wow. No, it wouldn't. So.
In fact, my niece's parents met in Holy City. That's why I'm so informed. I was never there.
Oh, no.
Chris, let's scroll through the picture, see if we can pick her up here. Thank goodness there wasn't Google Earth during that time that you could zoom in. Folks, thank you very much. You've been a wonderful audience. God bless you. I will be back August 24th. I don't think it's going to be the year without a summer. It might be Brent Rock Fire Redux, Chris. Are we sure?
Brent Rock Fire Redux.
Okay, but I'd love to have you back. Chris and I will discuss a date about the year without a summer. I think it's very important because the year 1816 and what was known as the Maunder Minimum and sunspot cycles, not to hit you with astronomy, we're in a similar dormant period with the sun, and which is cause for alarm from an astronomical perspective and seasonal perspective. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful rest of the summer.
I swear my picture is.
Oh, where's Josephine's picture? May I have Josephine's photograph, please?